welcome to The Book Show, a celebration of reading and writers. I'm Joe Donahue. Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist and best-selling author Helene Cooper tells the harrowing but triumphant story of Ellen Johnson Sirleaf, leader of the Liberian women's movement, winner of the Nobel Peace Prize, and the first democratically elected female president in African history. When Sirleaf won the 2005 Liberian presidential election, she demolished a barrier few thought possible, obliterating centuries of patriarchal rule. Cooper's new book, Madam President, tells of Sirleaf's evolution from an extraordinary Liberian mother of four boys to international banking executive, from a victim of domestic violence to a political icon, from a post-war president to a Nobel Peace Prize winner. Helene Cooper is the Pulitzer Prize-winning Pentagon correspondent for The New York Times, having previously served as White House correspondent, diplomatic correspondent, and the assistant editorial page editor. She's also the author of the best-selling memoir, The House at Sugar Beach. Again, the name of the new book is Madam President, The Extraordinary Journey of Ellen Johnson Sirleaf. And it's a pleasure to welcome Helene Cooper to this week's book show. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thanks so much for having me.
What a delight to have you on the program. Obviously, this is a personal story for you, but what led you to want to write about the Liberian president?
I'm from Liberia and grew up there before moving to the United States, so I've always, since then, kept my eye on Liberia. And I was stunned in 2005 because Liberia had just come through almost two decades of horrific civil war. It was the kind of war that you saw child soldiers and, you know, crazy soldiers in Halloween masks assaulting the civilian population. And then to come out of that and turn around and see the women of Liberia stage this incredible democratic power play in ushering in a woman as president, on the backs of this civil war, just stunned me. I was over here in the United States covering the George Bush presidency for the New York Times and following Condoleezza Rice around, as Secretary of State. But at the same time, I was completely captivated by what the women in my own country had just done. And I spent the next several years thinking, I want to go back and figure out what they did and how they did it.
I am fascinated by that notion of how much of this and of this story and of Ellen Johnson Sirleaf's story is that of a movement, of a women's movement, and how much is it really of her story particularly?
I struggled with this as well, and it turns out I came down right in the middle. It's two stories. It's almost two books. One is of a women's movement, and one is of Ellen. And, you know, at some point around the middle of the book, they join, but I don't think one would have necessarily happened without the other. A lot of the book is about women in Liberia who is sort of very representative of women all over Africa who've carried that continent on their backs. And these were the market women who kept making market and taking care of their children in the middle of this horrible civil war, who just got fed up at the end and said they'd never again, and they were going to put a woman in power because they believed a woman wouldn't take the country back to war. But then on the other hand, as you point out, this is also a story about an incredibly driven woman who almost made herself in some ways indispensable. You know, she's Harvard-educated, global bureaucrat with a background in monetary finance, taking over the country of Liberia at a time where the country had a $4.7 billion in foreign debt. And we're talking about a very poor country with no means of paying it back. And she was able to get that debt forgiven. There were many other things that she's been able to do in the 12 years now that she's been president. This is her last year, and she's stepping down at the end of the year. But I think a lot of this wouldn't have happened with someone else.
Give us an idea of when the seeds were planted for her particular story and the journey that she took. As you point out in the book, she is very understanding of both the lower and upper classes of Liberia. Give us an idea of her background that led her down that path.
You know, Liberia has a very interesting and unique history in that it was founded by freed American slaves who then went to Liberia in West Africa in the 1820s and set up the same kind of antebellum society that they had fled from in the American South, except in this case, they were now the elites and the rest of the native Liberian population made up the servants and the working class. This two-tiered system lasted for 150 years until it was upended in 1980 in a violent military coup in which the government at the time that Ellen was working for and at the time she was Minister of Finance was thrown over. Many of her colleagues, 13 of them, were executed on the beach by firing squad. Ellen was spared at the time because she was a woman. But she also was not a member of this ruling elite class because she wasn't descended of from the freed slaves. Her grandfather was a German trader, and her on one side and on the other side she had native Liberian roots. So she was able to sort of navigate both of these worlds. But when you ask where was the germ of her, you know, wanting to lead start. It's a really interesting story. In 1985, I mean, she was at the time up to that point, she was a bureaucrat. She worked for the government. She resigned from the government. She criticized the government. She was always sort of this weird mesh of political dissident and, you know, government official. And she was running. She went back to Liberia and criticized the government of Samuel Doe now and got thrown into jail for her trouble. And while she was in prison, in a cell in prison, the men who were next door to her in the cell were all executed as she's sitting, you know, terrified in the cell next to them. She heard them being shot by firing squad. And after that, the soldiers brought into her cell this 19-year-old Gio girl who they had just gang raped. And she's bleeding and crying hysterically and sitting, and Ellen comforted her. The two of them are sitting down on the floor in the cell and, you know, being heckled by the soldiers. And this sort of kind of started, I think, it was the spark that began the women's movement for Ellen, because she was seeing face to face what so many Liberian women had been going through, and kind of vowed at that point. She never saw this young girl again, but she vowed at that point that she was going to one day take over this country and put a stop to this sort of thing happening to women.
It is fascinating of where the allegiances fall in the story as well, because when Charles Taylor first opposes Samuel Doe, Ellen backs him, thinking that Taylor wouldn't be any worse than Doe, which turned out really not to be the case.
Absolutely. She was an initial supporter of Taylor, which, you know, she has lived to regret all of her life. She voted to send him money. When he first crossed over the Ivorian border into Liberia and started the civil war. So most Liberians at the time who really should have known better were taken by Taylor because they were so opposed to Doe. It was very much the enemy of my enemy is my friend. But Taylor turned out to be as bad as, if not worse than Doe, and he launched this civil war where you had these horrific scenes. It's not just the child soldiers and the rape and the assaults on the civilian population, but you had rebel soldiers and government soldiers both running around in wedding gowns and blonde wigs and Halloween masks and carrying their AK-47s and attacking villages and raping women. And you can imagine, I mean, war is hell anyway, but you imagine the sort of surreal fright mask level that they brought to it. And it's a wonder to me that anybody in Liberia who went through this is sane at all.
Helene Cooper is our guest. The name of the new book is Madam President, The Extraordinary Journey of Ellen Johnson Sirleaf. Give us an idea of the, as you say, she had this thought of being president and changing things. She first ran against Taylor in 1997, eventually winning in 2005. What were those years like of working so hard to try to achieve this point?
Yeah, after she ran against Taylor in 1997, and the truth is, as much as she will say that didn't happen, he beat her fair and square. She did not have the bulk of the popular vote at all. She complained afterwards that she thought those elections were rigged, but he did win. But you know that saying, hell hath no fury like a woman scorned. She spent the next few years going after him on the international stage. I mean, she did so many things to undermine him and to make sure that the things that he was doing in Liberia were very much kept on the public conscience and kept in the newspapers. And she and that people in the United States and all over the world were paying attention to his own misdeeds, that she orchestrated a lot of his own downfall. I mean, he orchestrated it himself, you know, with blood diamonds and all of the sort of things that he did to Liberia. But she's kind of helped to push him on his way.
In looking at that time and what ultimately she was able to do in winning the election of 2005, as we've mentioned, this comes from the overwhelming support from Liberian women. Did she know that right away, that that was the key?
I don't think she did. I mean, I think she came into it at first thinking, I'm going to win on my own merit. I'm qualified. I'm probably overqualified. And I'm going to appeal, you know, I'm going to go out and try to appeal to everybody. The Liberian women latched onto her. You know, it's sort of they found her. She didn't go out seeking them. And then once they found her, there's a click that went off in her mind that this is my constituency. It was fascinating how this happened. I mean, Liberian women realized early on that they weren't, many women weren't registering to vote. And so they started this huge get out the vote campaign, going, you know, from market to market, from village to village. They had girls ready to go and tend the market stalls of the market women who felt they were too busy to go register to vote. Babysitters, you name it. One of the organizers told me about a moment when she was up country doing the voter registration drive, and she was sleeping in this unfinished house and sleeping on the floor, the cement floor. Dirty, dirty floor, dirty place, and a rat, she said, ran over her face in the middle of the night. And she woke, you know, she jumped up, her heart seizing, wondering, what is it that makes it so important for me to get these women to register to vote? And, you know, she stayed there in that house with the rats and, you know, the next morning went to the next village. And it's that kind of drive that really, you know, Ellen eventually saw, and that it's really kind of what propelled her to the presidency. She never would have won with the male vote, because most of the men in Liberia weren't going to vote for her.
It certainly seems as though her time in prison had a profound impact on her.
It did. I mean, we talked about this several times in the whole process when I was writing the book, and I'd ask her what it was like for her to be in prison. She often didn't want to talk about it, but she talked a little bit about the prison rations. She lost a lot of weight, but she kept coming back to this Gio girl, the girl who was in the cell, that one night that they spent together. And, you know, she talked about her again and again and again. And I think that girl, you know, sort of left a huge imprint on her and drove her to do what she did.
When you talk about the challenges along the way, once she wins the presidency in 2005, I mean, obviously I'm using parlance that we use in the United States of a mandate. How much did she feel that there was a mandate and that change could really come, not just in her winning, but in actually in her governing?
She definitely, I don't know about the mandate part, because people in Liberia don't think that way, but she felt it was her responsibility to bring change. At the same time, she was terrified that, you know, Charles Taylor's removal from Liberia ended the Civil War, but it didn't end all the animosity between these warring groups. And she was always afraid, you know, from the second she became power, that she had to reach out to all of her political opponents, but she also had to reach out to the Taylor supporters and try to bring them into the government. She got a lot of criticism for that. Why are there Charles Taylor people in your government? To which she answered that she had to reach out to them and the country had to find some way to heal, you know. And so maybe co-opting them was one way to do it. But she remained fearful that at any time, you know, the people who supported Charles Taylor could erupt again. When he ran away, this is back in, when was it? It was like 2006, because he had gotten safe passage to Nigeria, and then he escaped right when Nigeria was about to turn him over. And Ellen Johnson Sirleaf was terrified when the International Criminal Court insisted that he be handed over to her in Liberia and she be the one to hand him over to the International Criminal Court. She didn't want him anywhere near Liberia. So she was afraid that even if he touched down in handcuffs in Liberia, his supporters would flock to him. And she tried to keep it quiet that he was being transferred through the Liberian airport from Nigeria, you know, to Sierra Leone. But the news of that got out. And, you know, you didn't see a flare-up, but she was really enormously relieved that there was not a spark after that of more of pro-Taylor stuff.
Talk about some of the early challenges that she had as president, because certainly, I mean, the country was in crippling debt, which was really one of the first things she had to deal with, right?
$4.7 billion in debt. I mean, it's enormous when you think about it, especially when you think about such a poor country. And that meant that Liberia couldn't borrow money from anybody else without paying that. So she went through to a lot of lengths, including, you know, agreeing to the Charles Taylor transfer to get the international community and the IMF and, you know, the Paris Club of donors and the big donors to forgive that debt. And she was able to do that. But beyond that, there are a lot of other things that she did once she became once she came into power. And I'm not trying to paint her as perfect because she's not by any stretch of the imagination. There's definitely a lot of corruption still in the government. It's pervasive throughout. Healthcare and education are nowhere where they should be. But she took a lot of big steps toward development. Development was really her forte, and she was able to woo a lot of foreign investors back to the country and bring some money in that way. And she also went after this culture of rape in Liberia, to where now, you know, you see in the past, rape was never even nobody bothered to even report rape. It was so prevalent that people just hushed it up, and you know, the women were silent. And you don't see that anymore. She's insistent. She was insistent that rape would be prosecuted, and she's really pushed that. And that's a big deal.
She was reelected in 2011. What did that reelection mean to her? Followed up very closely by the winning of the Nobel Peace Prize.
That was, though she won the Nobel Peace Prize in the middle of the re-election campaign. It wasn't even followed. It was right in the middle. And the men all got angry and boycotted the election because they said the whole thing was rigged and it wasn't fair. Why would the Nobel Committee give her a prize right in the middle of a presidential election? They were furious about it. It was actually really hilarious. In Liberia, the reaction to the Nobel was just complete wonder, because you have to remember, Liberia is a country that has had the most wretched presidents you can possibly imagine. I mean, we've had presidents who were accused of selling slaves. We had Samuel Doe, who, you know, killed all his political opponents. We had Charles Taylor, who's been indicted and convicted of war crimes. And then you get a Liberian president who wins a peace prize? People in Liberia were completely confounded. It's just so not in any. Liberia has been recognized for a peace prize. And that just really, the fact that this happened literally like a week and a half before Election Day, in the middle of a heated re-election campaign, just was too much for the men running against her. And they were like, this is ridiculous. You know, we're going to boycott it. And so she won very handily her second term.
Did it have an effect on her? Did it embolden her in a way?
No. I mean, she doesn't even like talking about the Nobel. It was like getting her to talk to me about it was like pulling teeth. She's so practical, and her personality is such that she tends to shake off the things that others might think of as big, both the good and the bad. In much the same way that she shakes off the Nobel, just keeps going about her business, you know, she shakes off other things that happen that, you know, she might not necessarily be proud of, and she, you know, throws it over her shoulder and keeps going. For instance, the early support of Charles Taylor. She was like, yeah, I was wrong. I shouldn't have done it. Let's move on. And so there's not an enormous amount of self-reflection, and I wonder if that's actually a characteristic that helps her to succeed.
I mean, do you find that, is that cultural? Do you find that even with yourself?
I think I've become so Americanized. I think it is cultural. I think when people are living in circumstances where you have war and strife and you're struggling for your very survival, you're not going to spend an enormous amount of time wondering about, you know, what kind of person you are, whether or decisions you make. Your worries are going to be much more basic. I have become more, the longer I live in America, the more time I spend, you know, on my psychological head trips. But Liberians are much more practical that way. When I was growing up in Liberia, when 1980 and the military coup happened, my mom was gang raped by soldiers who wanted my sisters and I, and she traded herself so that we wouldn't be touched. And after it happened, she came upstairs and told us what happened, and she went and got in the shower. And, you know, the next day we moved from our house because she deemed it wasn't safe there, and she worked very hard to get us out of the country. And she just moved on. I mean, it wasn't something that there was no rape counseling. There was no sitting and talking about it. There was no, she just moved on and she was going to get her kids out. And then she was going to do this. And then she was going to do that. And then she was going to do this and that. And it was years later that I started even trying to talk to her about it. And it's not like something that she kept hidden because she told us right away. But she didn't want to sit and pick it apart. And I maybe that is really, I've never thought about it that way. But maybe it is cultural.
And, of course, you read about that in your memoir, and that really is something that I assume that you still deal with. I mean, don't you think about that as something that, you know, is a part of who you are?
I do. I mean, I do, but I don't think, yeah, I do think it is part of who I am. It's part of, you know, it's part of my life. It's something that's happened. It's part of why, you know, my mom is 82 years old now and she's in great shape. But it's, you know, I'm never going to forget what she did for me.
We should note that Ellen Johnson Sirleaf is 78 years old. And as you say, she will be stepping down. What does her future hold?
That is such an interesting question. It shouldn't be, but it says a lot to Africa right there. Liberia has never in its history had a post-president. Presidents of Liberia die in office. They do not leave voluntarily. And that's the case around all of, you know, most of Africa. You know, most African presidents don't leave until you put a gun to their head. All of a sudden now we've got, voter registration is going on now for this upcoming elections, and she is stepping down. And I'm very curious. I mean, she says she's going to go hang out at her farm in Jiludwa, just outside of Monrovia. And she'll maybe give speeches and she'll heckle the president, whoever it is, if she thinks he's steering the wrong way. And I'm curious to see how she does as a post-president. I think that's actually something because we've never had that in Liberia. We don't know what to do with that.
But there is a place for that wisdom and guidance, isn't there?
I think so. I think people will pay attention to her. She's still, I mean, it's her second term, so she has a lot of political critics in the similar way that Barack Obama had so many political critics in his second term. And I think people are, you know, but I think that she will be listened to. If she ran for office again this year, she would win, looking, because it's the same cast of characters running against her who were before. But she's not going to do it because, you know, we have term limits there and she's abiding by it. But I think people, the women will listen to her. I think the men will listen to her to her as well, because she'll be a model of a successful Liberian president to actually get through two terms and leave the country in better shape than when you found it. It's saying something, because a lot of them didn't do that.
Elaine Cooper is the Pulitzer Prize-winning Pentagon correspondent for the New York Times, having previously served as the White House correspondent. Elaine Cooper, a great pleasure to have you on the program. Thank you very much for being with us.
This was really fun. Thanks a lot.
Thank you very much. Elaine Cooper's new book is Madam President, The Extraordinary Journey of Ellen Johnson Sirleaf, published by Simon & Schuster. We enjoy hearing from our listeners about our shows. You can email us at book@wamc.org, and you can listen again to this or find past book shows via podcast or at wamc.org. Sarah LaDuke produces our program. Bookmark us for next week, and thanks for listening for The Book Show. I'm Joe Donahue.